So this is the second talk in the course on the paramis, on the ten paramis. And the title is The Parami of Generosity, Dana, which brings richness. And the word dana is originally from Sanskrit and into Pali, and it's the same word that's moved into English and into the Latin languages, dana, donation, you say. Mm-hmm. Dana is to donate, it's the same word. And it means generosity, it means giving, it means sharing, and it means receiving in the view of the Dharma. And it's the first parami, because it tells you, right at the beginning, it tells you that the essence of the Dharma is not holding on. The Dharma is about non-clinging, non-grasping. And dana is exactly the opposite. It's not hanging on and not holding on. It's the open hand rather than the closed fist. And it's not just about giving material things. And it's an attitude of mind which is much deeper and more subtle than material things. We think generosity is about material things. How much can I fish in my pocket and give to Tovana at the end of a course? And the headaches that I get from thinking about it. But it's not about just material things. It's giving our time. It's giving our energy. It's giving our attention. It's giving our life, which we normally think, I give my life to myself. But of course we don't. We give our life to everybody. Every mother knows that deeply, but others too, if they look, and even if they're not mothers, if they look carefully, your life is given away. When you work for a high-tech company, you're working like crazy. Your whole life is given to others. But you don't notice it. You think, oh, I'm doing it because I want the money, or I want the fee, I want something back. But you don't notice that while you want something back, you're actually giving your life away to others. And it's the first parami, but it's also a very high parami. It's a very developed parami. And actually all of them are very developed. They're sort of ground level and top level at the same time. And there's a nice story from the Talmud. About the different a number of rabbis that were, how they died. And one rabbi, when his time came and the angel of death came to take his soul, he said, I need a bit longer in this body. So the angel of death said, well, how do you want to do that? He said, well, look, I'm a carpenter. I work with concentration. Can I just have a bit more time of carpentry and concentration? And the angel of death said, yes, as long as you concentrate, I won't take your soul. After like a few hours, the angel of death stepped on a twig, on a piece of wood, and the piece of wood went tack, and the carpenter, the rabbi, lost his concentration, and he took his soul. Another rabbi said to the negotiated with the angel of death and said, I'm learning Torah, I'm studying, I want Chokhmah, give me more time. And the angel, well, as long as you're studying, I'll give you more time. So he gave him more time until he got exhausted, he couldn't study anymore, and then he took his soul. But the highest was a rabbi called Reb Zushia. And his quality was generosity. And the angel of death knocked on his door and dressed as a poor man and said, I need bread. And Rabbi Yoshua said, I know who you are. Anyway, I'll give you bread. And the angel of death said, well, you know what? I'll have the bread and then I'll wait for you till you give me your life through your generosity. I won't take your life, you give it as an act of generosity. And gives you a flavor of the power of generosity. And the basic, all the paramis are qualities that we develop in life when we take the self less dominating our existence. The self is about security, about having, about boundaries, about what I need, what I want, how I look at life, my views, my attitudes, my needs, my desires and aversions. All of that stuff is the self. When the self is less dominant, then qualities come out which are not those self qualities. And one of them is generosity. And so generosity is really a primary quality of letting go of self, of those boundary, needy movements of me that all the time wants more and holds on. So the giving is the basic movement out of that. And it's very basic, it's very fundamental. It's the anthropological first movement, the gift. It's very, very fundamental. And because it's this open hand, it has results in our personality or in our being, reducing fear, reducing insecurity, reducing tightness, reducing the tendency for me to be against the world, seeing the world as a problem or a threat. This open hand of giving is this open hand that is saying, I am with the world, I can give to the world, I don't need to hold on because of my fears about the world. So it's a fundamental act of openness. And that's why it's so important. And so much, it's so important to learn it and to understand. And indeed, in the East today, dana has become the number one practice of people that don't meditate, that don't go to monasteries, that don't really practice much else. And if you ask people in Thailand what the Buddhist culture means for them, they very often would say generosity. That's what it means for us. And it's been like that for thousands of years. The lay people, the people in the villages, express their Buddhist faith by giving to the monks. And generosity is primary act of being aligned, being a Buddhist in Buddhist countries. And in most traditional Buddhist monasteries, generosity is what you learn first before you go to, before you learn meditation. You learn to give to the senior monks, you learn to cook for others, you learn to serve others. You, as if you're a young person going into a monastery, you spend years sometimes giving. Or a Zen monastery, you spend a long time giving and being not busy with yourself, but busy helping others. Of course, this is abused, and as everything is, religion tends to abuse values, basic values. Yeah, tends to abuse, to distort basic values, and it's sad to read about how some of the monasteries were receiving gifts in Burma from the generals that were suppressing the people with a lot of cruelty and ignorance, but they went to the monastery to give gifts. And the monastery, as long as they can give gifts to the monastery, they felt fine. They can do what they like. And the monasteries were sort of part of that, except for some young monks that took the courage to go against that. So it can be abused like everything, but just a sense that it's so basic. It's abused when we give to gurus, when we give to Pav, when someone takes our money for spiritual, giving us spiritual practice and says, and we want to give them things, and give them our whole life, and they take and take and take and take. It's abused. Okay, but never mind that. Anyway, things are abused in the world. So that's part of the thing. There is a nice story, one of my favorite Dharma stories, about a monk that who's thirsty, and he goes to a village, and there's an Indian woman, untouchable woman, from the lowest caste, who is drawing water from a well. And the monk says, "Can I have some water?" And she says, "Well, you're not allowed to take water from me, because I'm the lowest caste, the Rama, Hina Mukha, and untouchable in India." And he said to her, "I didn't ask you about your caste. I asked you for water." And she was so touched by that she gave him water, and she ran to the Buddha and said, "I've met this amazing monk of yours. And he's so wonderful." And the Buddha said to her, "You didn't fall in love with the monk, you fell in love with his kindness." And how do you fall in love with kindness? You just be kind. That's how to fall in love with kindness. You can see that way it rolls, the dana, it rolls. So because it is the opposite direction from existential anxiety, daga, which leads to grasping and holding and protecting, it's this, it also brings joy. It is the antidote, it's the medicine against this tightness, this anxiety. So dana, generosity, giving, it brings joy. Like the quote from the Dalai Lama, I think I said it before, that he said once, it's so much more joyful to give to others than just to yourself, because there's more of them. Lao Tzu said, "The wise man accumulates nothing, but the more he does for others, the bigger is his existence. And the more he gives to others, the greater his richness." It's that movement of joy and abundance and fullness, is shefa, which dafka is giving, brings you that, not taking. Taking and having and grasping always gives you a feeling you don't have enough. Giving makes you sense your abundance. You can give. It gives you an inner world of. And it's sometimes a process that's not so easy for us. When it gets into relationship issues with people, and with the world. And then something happens to us underneath that makes us feel we can't give. And that's all on the level of self. It's not that, not on the material level. But for example, in relationships, can we give space to the other to be themselves? That's difficult. Someone close to you, your mother, father, partner, you don't agree with, that disturbs you, or someone you don't like that disturbs you. Can you, it's the same process exactly of dana, giving them the space they need to be themselves. And so where this fits together, dana with love, that's where dana and love and intimacy all is an example of how they all fit together. If, for example, you could say, mother's milk, chalav em, is basic dana. That is dana. Mother's milk is dana. But it's clearly not something that the mother has to say, oh, I've got to give up. I mustn't hold on to my milk. I have to give it. It's intimacy. It's part of closeness. It's part of love. They collect together. The dana and the love and the intimacy become all one thing. And we can see that in relationships. For example, I don't know what. I have a choice with my children to be controlling and say, I think you should do this, or you do something wrong, or you shouldn't do that, or I don't agree with you like that, or generous, saying, I want to watch you being the best person you can be. Never mind if you agree with me, if you don't agree with me, it's nothing to do with it. I will give you dana of your freedom and my love, dana, like mother's milk. You see the difference? And how that creates happiness rather than control. So just put that in that big perspective of dana is in our relationships with everything. And it shifts our view of the world. And makes happiness in the world and therefore in ourselves. Just living with dana just makes happiness. Not holding on makes more joy. And there's many stories in the suttas of how this works, because what again and again the suttas say, don't start with meditation. Your spiritual life, leave it. Leave meditation. Leave the Satipatthana Sutta. Start with generosity. And it's classically the first step on what's called the gradual path. There's a number of different ways this is gradual path, step-by-step path in the Dharma to awakening. A number of ways which this is described. But one of them is starting with generosity. And it's really clearly expressed. But if you start with generosity, what happens then is you experience more joy and happiness. And the direct result of that is more concentration and your meditation is simply better. And for example, there's one story of a rich lady that gave to the original monks her orchard for them to live in. And someone asked her, why do you do that? And she said, I'm giving my orchard because it brings me happiness to see how I've given my orchard a bustan mango. It was a mango orchard. Because it makes me so happy that I can give to the monks And I see them in the orchard and I'm so happy. And because of that happiness, my meditation is deep and strong. And that's what she said. So in a way, she's doing it for herself. We should give respect to our small self in all of this. It is there. When we are faced in the line at a Tovana retreat, no one tells us how much to give. And we're faced in the line and we have to decide how much to give. And all of this will come up. The small self and the big self. And the small self and the big self will fight each other. And the small self will say, oh, but if I give all this money to Tovana, I won't have enough money for blah, 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 blah. And the big self says, ah, let go, doesn't matter, it'll be fine, I manage, you know, life is fine. And the two of them are discussing, probably while you're standing in the queue, waiting to give the credit card, and it's still... The small self and the big self, they talk to each other. Let's say, it's not easy. When there's 100 beggars outside your hotel in India, how many do you give to? What do? You can't give to 100. But do you give to any? Or all? Or you just feel bad? Or you want to, or you quickly get the next plane back to Tel Aviv? Or, you know, what do? This is challenge, but this is our challenge of the small self and the big self. This is the way it works. The holding, grasping hand and the open hand. And what does that mean for you, for each of us? And there's no rules here. We're in open territory. And basically, the bottom line is we have to be the biggest and freest that we can be, and then act spontaneously. And it doesn't mean that because we don't give to 100 beggars, we are small, or we are holding on. Maybe that day we just don't feel like giving to 100 beggars. It's okay. There's no rule that says we must give 100 beggars, otherwise I'm not serving the parami of generosity. And then that's control. I have to be generous to all the beggars in the world in India. I have to. No, it's control. It's unhappiness. It's not joy. But spontaneity, the Buddha said it also. To sort this out, this problem of how much to give in the Tovana retreat, be the biggest, most open being that you can be, with the most trusting and so on and so on, and then act spontaneously. Whatever that, and maybe that is only 10 shekels or 10,000 shekels. No rules. But when you do the act, you act spontaneously, intuitively, as you are right then. The parami is very much an inner movement. And upam, it's an attitude of life which is very much like a mother. The Dharma, it's the female side of the Dharma, the more mother's milk, which is in the Dharma, very much, very important in the Dharma, right the way through the Dharma, the attitude is of nutrition, of asana, of feeding. Even attachment, upadana, the word for attachment is actually what you feed. It's not what you attached, stuck with, it's what do you feed in yourself or in others. feed nutrition, feeding. Do you want? Mazin. Hazana. Mazin. Ech mazin. So it's feeding is it very important in this? You don't find in the suttas blame. You don't find words of evil. You don't find words negative states of mind that of pressure, but you find words of feeding the beautiful things in the person, feeding the spirit, feeding the paramis, and not giving food to the defilements, kilesas. Kilesas are the problem issues, desire, need, aversion, hate, anger. It's not that you attack them, you just don't feed them, and you feed generosity and other paramis instead. The whole attitude in the Dharma is, what do you feed? Taking away the pressure and the blame based on good and bad. That language isn't there in the Dharma, in the at least traditional Buddha Dharma. So it's... I remember years ago in Nepal that I was in a village called Dulikel, and I sat... It's a beautiful village, it's somewhere in the mountains, and this was in 1976. And I just sat in the village for 2 weeks, and every night I would go to this little hut in a temple and sit there with a Baba called Kali Baba. And the people used to come during the evening and complain that there wasn't this in the village, there wasn't that in the village, and how do they manage, and so on. And one day, one morning, they came to his place and there was nobody there. And I came and he'd gone. Nobody there. He disappeared. No one knew where he went, no one knew what he was doing. 2 months or 3 months later, he came back to the village with a sack on his shoulders of small Indian coins, paisa. Paisa is really like grushin. He put it down in the middle of the village and said, "Go and build yourself a school room for the small children and shut up." So he'd been begging on the streets of India for paisa, for grushim, for one grush, because that's all they were. He'd been begging for 3 months on the streets of India in order to come back and give to the people in the village and the children a school building, because they only could learn out in the street or under a tree. They had no school. So just this movement of I'm just give, you know. I don't expect anything. I don't want anything from you. I will give because dana is giving without expectation, without anything in return. The practice of dana is pushing our boundary. Where we have limits to our generosity, that's the place to work. For that, we need to know the limits. It's exactly your issue, Nurit, with 100 beggars. Or my issue, or your issue, each of us, we have our limit. How much we can, how much? But that limit, when we meet it, is the place where we expand from a smaller person to a bigger person. But we need to meet it to see, where is my limit? And we all have them. It often is, "Oh, I'm so tired, I can't give anymore to my children, my neighbors, my work, it doesn't matter what. I can't anymore, I have no energy, I have no money anymore, I have no resources for this anymore, I can't go there. Whatever, I have no attention to give you. I want to rest. I want to stop. I can't give you attention. I don't have all the time meeting. That's where we work. That's where we push, and we find ourselves, and we meet the self at that place of limit. The bodhisattva, and I'll talk about that in a minute, doesn't have any limits. Bodhisattva is a figure of all paramis are matured. That's the definition of bodhisattva. The bodhisattva doesn't say, oh, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, I can't give any more to anybody. There's no, the bodhisattva never gets tired. Doesn't have any limits. And the limit, the place of limit, we recognize it because it's the place of measuring. It's where we measure how much I can give. So, someone once asked Thich Nhat Hanh, who's great Dharma soul, how much to give, how much dana to give in a dana ceremony that he was doing in somewhere. And he said, give it when, yeah, it should hurt a bit. give until it hurts. In other words, he's saying, find the limit. There is where the giving is really happening, because there, if it's easy, if you've got a million and you give a hundred, you're not experiencing dana fully. It's not the experience of dana. But when you meet your limit and you let go, then dana is working in you at that moment. So where it hurts is the limit. Exactly where you push the boundary of having doubt and fear. Will I have enough? Will I manage? Can I give? I must hold on. I won't have if I give, all that. That's the limit. That's where. So if it hurts, means there. But also, dana, by the way, is receiving. That's why, another reason why it makes us happy. Because the dana, it never has really one address. Like, it's all from me. I have to give to the world. Meanwhile, the world is giving to you. Everything is giving to everything else. There's nothing that's not giving. You're being given. Especially if you define dana as not only material things, but also attention, also feeding, also space or awareness of who you are, some sense of recognition. Looking in the eyes is dana. So clearly dana is a cycle of giving and receiving, and it's both together. And it's relationship. All relationships are based on dana. Because you cannot have relationships if you are locked in yourself. With your boundaries and your needs, and the relationships just keep not working. So relationships are about giving and receiving. I remember reading way back, as a biologist, I was reading Conrad Lorenz, who wrote many books on aggression and violence in animals and relationships. And it was really interesting the way that relationships are based on fear and, I mean, basically the animals want to eat each other. So if they let go of that, then they can be friends. So the even zugyut in the animal world, they're sort of two tigers or seals or fish. They want to eat each other, but they'll let go of that. they'd be generous in order to have babies. They might eat each other later.
Or their kids.
Or their kids, yeah. Or their parents and grandparents. So, it's very helpful, and I'm talking really practically now, it's really helpful to see dana as circulation, magaliyut, and giving and receiving, and relationship, marechet yachasim, because it's a truth of things. And the truth always frees us and makes us feel good. If we're connected to the truth, we feel good, we feel at home. While if we're against the truth, we feel tight and closed. And the truth is that the world is based on giving and receiving. You got this body. You were given this body as dana. This body, life, you were given life, it's dana. And soon you have to give it away. Dana. You give, spirit goes back to spirit, and choma goes back to choma. You give away your life. You receive and you give. The sun is giving, the trees are receiving, and they're giving. Everything is giving and receiving. There isn't an end to it, the giving and receiving. This attitude really makes us have a wonderful life. It really makes us a wonderful life. And it doesn't matter whether you have a big car or a little car, whether you have a villa or you live in a hut. It's actually not important. You can be a rich man and have this attitude, and you're free. Or a poor man with this attitude, you're free. It's not to do with how much you have, it's to do with this attitude of being part of the flow of giving and receiving. And that open, free sense of letting it all happen. Giving and receiving, not holding on. Receiving delightedly and giving delightedly. Give with gladness, receive with gladness. Feel how freeing that is, that attitude. And it doesn't matter whether your karma made you rich or made you poor. It doesn't matter. And part of that attitude is a deep understanding that we can give because we don't own it in the first place. Ein lanu ba'alut, ze lo sheli, me'atchala. If this body isn't even mine, do I own this body? If this body isn't mine, I don't own anything, really. I don't own, what do I own? I don't have anything. Neither does anybody. We own, that's what the Buddha said, it's a sort of awakened view. Owning nothing, holding on to nothing, you're free. Because it's the truth, we don't really own anything anyway. There's nothing that's mine in the first place. What is mine? What is mine? What can I say really is mine? Okay, someone said I have a house because it's written in Tabu. Is it mine? Because it's written in Tabu somewhere. Is it mine? This house, I eat it, I can take it with me into the grave. I own a piece of land, I don't own anything. I own this body, no. This body was given to me, it can be taken away, it's made of carbon, chankan, pachman, chamtzan, that's mine. So anyway, you don't own anything. So the dana is going with the truth, and therefore it's joyful. Therefore it's at ease. So, to finish, I want to give a few words about the Bodhisattva, because it's a very nice image. It comes from the Mahayana tradition. It's really one of the main differences between the Mahayana and the Theravada world is the whole concept around the Bodhisattva. Bodhi means consciousness, sattva means pure or high. And the Bodhisattva is not only in the Mahayana, it's also before that, in the early Dharma, but the Mahayana world took it and made it very, very important. And basically it said that instead of disappearing into bliss and not being born again as a Buddha, you actually are in life manifesting awakening by awakening others. That's being Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is an awakener. That's his job. Job description. An awakener. And he gives the gift, his dana is giving the gift of liberation. The highest gift that you can give is awakening. According to the Dharma, the highest gift, the matana hi gdola that you can possibly give is awakening, is wisdom, is liberation for others. So that's his dana. And he matures that parami all the time. And it's spontaneous. The Bodhisattva doesn't measure in medidot, in hashva'ot, if I give that. Maybe I'll awaken all the cats in the world, but I won't awaken the fish. Maybe I'll awaken only people that smile, but I won't awaken those that shout at me. He doesn't measure. The Bodhisattva doesn't measure. That's the image. It's a very esoteric image, but very beautiful. The highest gift, anyway, that you can give is not material, but spiritual. So, just as long, I think that it's inspired me personally to keep teaching. I feel it's a little bit of that kind of message inside somewhere that says, dana, this is your dana. Like I've received the Dharma from my teachers and from the world. So I give. That's the cycle. So it's not so easy to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, take a train, drive to Nauria, take a train to Tel Aviv, be here, meetings all day, the Vadman ahead of Topana for 5 hours, and etc., etc. And at 10, 12 at night, I'll get back to Nauria. But the dana, giving and receiving, it's the flow. And it feels right. Otherwise, it wouldn't do it. It's not, I don't have to teach. No compulsion. I don't feel I have to teach. I'm quite happy not teaching. But there is a movement of that feels right. And I think that's the feeling of dana, a sort of rightness that is in giving and receiving. And especially the highest gift is the gift of dharma, of the spiritual awakening that brings so much to this world and to ourselves and to each other. Okay, thank you.